Welcome to the Sickle Cell Disease edition of Rare Disease Advisors Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the SCD community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking today with Dr. Heather Stefanski in Minneapolis. She's Vice President of Medical Services at the National Marrow Donor Program, which runs the Be the Match program. Before that, Dr. Stefanski was an associate professor of pediatrics at the University of Minnesota, where she was involved in clinical care and research involving children with life-threatening blood and immune system disorders. One of her areas of focus was the use of cord blood units in hematopoietic cell transplants and CAR T therapy. Dr. Stefanski is board certified in both pediatrics and pediatric hematology oncology. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Dr. Stefanski, this month, September, is National Sickle Cell Awareness Month. In your opinion, what is the importance of this awareness month and your role in bringing attention to these patients?
So the reason that Sickle Cell Awareness Month is important is, for one, is for those that don't have sickle cell disease to be aware of the trials and tribulations that sickle cell patients go through on a daily basis. And not only that, but also to educate those that are taking care of sickle cell patients to be aware of the barriers that they face in getting access to great healthcare.
Can you please tell us a bit about the National Marrow Donor Program, as well as the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, known as CIBMTR?
Sure. So NMDP was founded in 1987 to find unrelated donors for patients that are undergoing stem cell transplant for certain types of diseases. And originally, transplant was only used for hematologic malignancies, so leukemias initially, and then and also for unrelated donors. And then, however, the first transplant in the world was done in 1968, and that was for a patient that had severe combined immunodeficiencies, which is also a rare disorder. And that was done at the University of Minnesota, my alma mater. So I'm very proud to have come from there. And so the NMDP plays a very important role because we find unrelated donors for patients that are undergoing stem cell transplants. So if you don't have a matched sibling, for example, which is the standard of care for transplant, then you would have to go with an unrelated donor potentially. And we are the organization that can do that for you. And this unrelated donor could be, it could come from an umbilical cord blood, or it could come from a volunteer unrelated donor on our registry, which is the Be the Match registry, or other registries as well. So we facilitate all transplants within the United States.
The organization known as CIBMTR, what is that exactly?
So the CIBMTR is an organization that is able to look at outcomes of all patients that undergo stem cell transplant. And the importance of this organization, I cannot state enough, because we have been able to make changes in transplant to make them better for all sorts of patients because of the research that comes from the CIBMTR. So it is an outcomes database. So all transplant centers essentially report these outcomes to the CIBMTR. So let's say we have a question about sickle cell patients, for example, which one of the papers that we're going to be talking about did. And so how you answer those questions, you can't just say, how do we look at this and assume that we're going to have the information that we need. You need a very robust database that is going to have all the information about that patient's transplant. Are they looking at what the conditioning regimens are, which means how did you prep that patient for transplant? Are they looking at how do they prevent graft versus host disease, which means what are the medicines or what part of the conditioning regimen helped with preventing graft versus host disease? Are we looking at eras of transplant? So how has that changed? And the only way that you can do that is with a robust database, and that is what the CIBMTR has allowed us to do. And we can truly see also, what are the trends in the field? So are people using more matched sibling donors? Are they using unrelated donors? Are they using haploidentical donors, which is then a family member, which is what we consider half a match? That's what haplo means. Are they using mismatched unrelated donors? And then what are the outcomes of patients? And so we've learned so much from the CIBMTR that this has really propelled our field forward.
So one of the biggest problems in treating sickle cell disease is difficulty in finding matched donors, correct?
Correct.
Can you explain why that's so hard?
Well, it's very hard because of the, first of all, the composition of the registry makes it difficult. And even, you know, and for African Americans in particular, on the Be the Match registry, although it's the most diverse registry in the world, the chance that an African American can find a match is around, you know, 30 to 40%, which is not when comparing that to a Caucasian, such as myself, I have about a 75 to 80% chance of finding a match. America is also the melting pot, right? Like we have a lot more diversity in our HLA molecules, or which the HLA molecules are what make us unique and what we match on. And so as they become more diverse, then the registry needs to become more diverse. Or the other option is we need to become much better at, instead of having to use a fully matched donor, to be using a mismatched donor to make that safer for patients and to make it ensure that the transplant's going to go well. So those are the things that we're working on now. And also for sickle cell patients, there are certain gene therapy trials that are going on that can help patients with sickle cell disease as well.
You did mention umbilical cord blood. How does that compare to non-umbilical cord blood, to actual marrow transplants?
Yes. So the difference is the umbilical cord blood is procured at the time when a baby is born. And so within that umbilical cord blood, it's stored in a bag. And in that bag, there's only going to be a defined number of stem cells. And you're only going to get that defined number of stem cells when you collect it from the umbilical cord blood or the umbilical cord. You cannot go back and get more cells, okay? And in order for a patient that's undergoing stem cell transplant to engraft, they actually need a certain number of stem cells to engraft. Now with bone marrow and with peripheral blood, so peripheral blood is more common than bone marrow now, you can get many, many stem cells to engraft. In that umbilical cord blood, although there are stem cells there, it's more difficult to use that with adult patients, for example, because if you don't have enough stem cells based on a patient's weight, which is what it's based on, then you're going to need more than one umbilical cord blood. And the difference between umbilical cord blood and other stem cell sources is that because there are not as many stem cells in that bag, that it's going to take longer for that patient to engraft, which means that white cells are going to grow. So for example, it's about like a 7 to 10 day delay compared to both bone marrow and peripheral blood. And so patients that are undergoing cord blood transplant can have more infections, for example, potentially, and are in the hospital longer. And also the issue with cord blood is that it's harder to engraft. However, the beauty about cord blood is that there is less graft versus host disease, and you can get away with less of a match. So whereas you needed truly, you know, until some of the new GVHD prophylaxis has come around, you truly needed an 8 out of 8 match. With cord blood, you could always get away with less of a match. So we base it on 6 instead of 8. And so like a 4 out of 6 cord, for example, I could give to a patient, and the likelihood that they were going to get graft versus host disease was not very high.
Okay, so let's get right to the study that's just been released. Yeah. Long-term survival after hematopoietic cell transplant for sickle cell disease compared to the United States population. What is this study all about, and what are its main conclusions?
So what this study wanted to look at is, for one thing, it wanted to use a database that is publicly available, and looking at sickle cell patients and looking at what was their survival after 2 years after transplant. And so the reason that they waited for 2 years after transplant is because within the first 2 years after transplant, you can still have transplant-related complications that might impact survival. And so one of the thoughts was, what happens after 2 years and what does the survival look like for patients with sickle cell disease that have undergone stem cell transplant? And essentially, you know, it looked very great in that patients that had gone past 2 years had excellent survival. And so when you looked at the 12-year probability of survival for these patients was 97%, which is really excellent. Compared to an age, race, and sex-matched U.S. population, which is really important because you want to compare sort of apples to apples, whereas if you weren't, you know, different types, if you're not basing it on that, then, you know, obviously older people are going to have a higher probability of death compared to younger people, right? And so that's very important, the way that they did this. So the risk for late death after transplantation was higher as late as 7 years after transplant, but the risk receded over time. And so the patients, you know, at the 12-year time point, the probability of survival was 97%. And so the graft failure after the 2-year time point, so that is a risk in sickle cell patients, was 7%. And it was higher in patients that had received a graft from not their siblings.
Does any of these conclusions surprise you? I mean, that's exactly what we would have expected, right?
I think it's not surprising, but it also gives hope to the sickle cell population in seeing that if you make it past 2 years, which can be difficult, but at the same time, that you can still have a good quality of life and that the risk of death is very low and the chance that you're going to survive is very high. So I think this was a really critical study and will hopefully help patients with sickle cell disease to understand transplant.
Dr. Stefanski, we are out of time. Thank you very much for speaking with us. I appreciate your efforts.
Welcome.
And This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.